is a work I've done in collaboration with Luca Vecchi and Ian Shoemaker. So some people might think that the solar neutrino physics connected to the oscillations is no longer appealing as it was, for instance, 20 or 30 years ago. However, the message that I want to convey through this talk is that this is not exactly the case. Solar neutrino physics through the oscillation can still be a very important probe in order to see possible signal for new physics. And this new physics can be not only connected to neutrinos, but also to dark matter. So let me first start by describing the model I'm going to use through this talk. So we are considering the very well-known standard model particles that are coupled to the dark matter with an interaction with nucleons, and is the same interaction that is keeping the dark matter kinetically coupled in the early universe, and is the same interaction that is responsible for the relic abundance. We are considering a sterile sector, which is coupled to the standard model through mixing. And finally, there is a new gauge interaction of type U1, which is connecting the dark matter sector and the sterile sector. Further assumption is that the dark matter has to be asymmetric with a mass between 5 and 15 GeV. The reason for this is that we want dark matter to cluster inside the sun. So this is the model. Now, why are we actually considering this model? The reason is that so all these species that compose our model have been already considered in literature. However, we are putting all these species together and we are trying to find a possible signature. One of this piece is that not all the data that are currently available from oscillation experiment are actually pointing towards a trineutrino framework. Part of this data that are called the short baseline anomalies, they are pointing towards the existence of a 40 neutrino with a mass around the electron volt and a mixing which is very similar to the one measured for theta 1-3. On the other hand, also the existence of sterile neutrino with secret interaction is something already known in literature, because this may help in reconciling the short baseline anomalies with cosmology, because we know that the short baseline anomalies can produce a correction to the number of effective neutrinos during BBN and CMB of order one. And this, of course, is against our constraint. On the other hand, if we have a neutrino dark matter interaction, this can keep the dark matter kinetically coupled until later time. This can wash out the small scale density perturbation and therefore prevent the formation of the smallest halos. And this can be, in principle, a solution to the missing satellite problem. So these are the main motivations. Now, what are the constraints that we can already put on this model? So first of all, I'm going to report all these constraints into this plane, where on the x-axis I have the mass of the gauge mediator expressed in electron volt and in log scale. And on the y-axis I have the gauge coupling constant. All the calculation for this constraint are given by assuming a mass of 5 GeV for the dark matter, a mass of the sterile neutrino of 1 electron volt, and also a mixing angle for the sterile neutrino around 0.1. So let me also underline that, so in this work we are actually considering the possibility that has been already considered in literature, that the production of sterile neutrinos in the early universe was actually postponed until later ages, I mean later than the CMB and BBN. So we can avoid the constraint coming from these two epochs. Now, the first thing that we have to consider for the constraints is that actually we have a self-interaction for dark matter. This might have an impact on the dark matter halo ellipticity. The stronger is the interaction, the more there will be an isotropization of the velocity distribution, so the more our distribution will actually become spherical. On the other hand, we also have a constraint coming from the neutrino dark matter interaction. As I said, this can introduce a cutoff in the matter power spectrum. And in this case, we have a constraint coming from the Lyman alpha observation, which is basically saying that this cutoff cannot be greater than 5 × 10⁻¹⁰ solar masses. Of course, we also have constraint from the as far as the interaction between dark matter and nucleons is concerned. In this case, I'm just reporting the constraint coming from xenon 1 ton. For our range of mass, so let's say around 5 GeV, we have an upper limit of 10⁻⁷⁵ centimeters squared if we consider the spin-independent cross-section. Of course, if we consider spin-dependent, we have a much looser constraint. Another consequence of our model is that if you consider the propagation of neutrinos in the universe, we are actually introducing an interaction between the active neutrinos propagating in the universe and the sterile component of the cosmic neutrino background. The consequence of this interaction is actually convertive and active into a sterile neutrino. So if this happens, and in particular if the mean free path for this interaction is too short, we are basically erasing all of the distant sources that are producing the ice cube events. But if we erase the distant sources, this means that we can affect the isotropy observed by the ice cube events. And very similar consideration can be also given for the events observed for the supernova in the 87. Now, so these were all the constraints. Now, let's look what are the possible signature of this model. So if you consider ultra-high energy neutrinos that are propagating in our dark matter halo, since we have an interaction between the dark matter and the neutrinos, this can introduce a new effective matter potential, so we can have a modification of the standard oscillation pattern. In particular, in our case, or at least for the range of mass of the mediator we are interested in, the expression for this effective potential is exactly the same for the standard Fermi potential. So it is just given by the product of the dark matter density and Gx. Gx is just the equivalent of G Fermi in this case. And it's given by the ratio between the gauge coupling constant and the mass of the mediator.
Do you mean 2 or 3 or 10 to the 23?
No, 10 to the 23, yes. So this is what I'm going to say now. So if you consider the ratio between the mass of the mediator and the gauge coupling constant to be of the order of 1 eV, which is not excluded by our parameter space, you actually have a very huge ratio between Gx and G Fermi, which is of the order of 10 to the 23. What this means is that you don't actually need a large density of the dark matter in order to have a sizable effect for the oscillations. In particular, in this case of ultra-high energy neutrinos propagating in the dark matter halo, we can do a rough estimate of the region that we can probe for this model by assuming that we have an MSW resonance with the atmospheric mass difference. So the region that can be probed is the one reported in this slide. However, the constraint that we can actually extract in this case, they are not so reliable because in principle we don't know the flavor composition at their source for this kind of neutrinos. And moreover, we have a much more powerful signature that is coming from the sun. So if you consider dark matter particle crossing the sun, they can scatter onto nucleons, and eventually, if they lose enough energy, they can eventually get trapped inside the gravitational potential of the sun. If this happens, the electroneutrinos produced inside the sun, they can feel a new matter potential, which is going to have an impact on the oscillation pattern. And this is something that we can see in the data that we are taking from solar neutrino experiment, but also in the data that we have already taken for the solar neutrinos. But before looking into the oscillation part, it is relevant to look at the at how the dark matter is actually clustering inside the sun. So after thermalization, the expression for the dark matter density is very simple. It's given by that expression, where the radial the characteristic radius of this region for a dark matter mass of around 5 GeV is just 5% of the solar radius. But how many dark matter particles we actually have? So if you don't consider the annihilation of dark matter, which is why we are actually assuming asymmetric dark matter, if you avoid considering evaporation, which is why we are considering a range of mass between 5 and above 5 GV, and if you also consider the self-interaction not to be important, then we are just left with the nucleon dark matter interaction. In this case, if you calculate the number of dark matter particles divided by the one for electrons, you actually have a very small number, 10 to the minus 21, if you consider the upper limit for the spin independent cross-section. However, this very small number can actually be compensated by a very small mass of the gauge mediator in order to have a sizable effect on the oscillation. Sorry?
The mediator is coupling the sort of order of one inch, right? So.
But I mean, here, no, the actually. Wait. The gauge coupling is not, or the one will be here.
Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. So here I am reporting in red the region that has been already excluded by the constraint I've been talking about before, whereas the region reporting in light blue is the region that in principle can be proved by using solar neutrinos. But this is just a very rough estimate. In particular, these two dashed lines have been obtained by assuming that the strength of the Fermi potential in the sun and the new exotic potential, they are of the same order. The upper line, it refers to a cross-section, which is the upper limit coming from the spin independent cross-section limit, and the bottom one refers to the upper limit considering the spin dependent cross-section. Now here is a very important plot. With the continuous line, I am reporting the production point distribution for all the electron neutrino fluxes produced inside the sun, whereas the field region, that unfortunately cannot be seen very well, they report the dark matter density distribution for two masses. The one on the left, peaking at about 3% of the solar radius, represents a mass of 15 GV. The other one on the right, which peaks at 5%, represents a mass of 5 GV. Now, if you consider a mass of 5 GV, you can see that the boronate neutrinos, the beryllium-7, and the PEP neutrinos, they are actually produced inside the region of the dark matter. But if you consider the green line, which represents the PP neutrinos, they are actually produced mostly outside the region of the dark matter. So in this case, we don't expect a huge effect for the oscillations. On the other hand, for the CNO neutrinos, they are actually produced inside the dark matter region. So also in this case, we expect a significant effect. The only problem is that we don't have measured the CNO neutrinos yet. Now, let's have a look on what the solar neutrino data can actually tell us about this model. First, let's have a look on how is our current understanding of the standard solar neutrino physics, so we don't consider sterile or dark matter. So on the left panel, I'm just reporting the standard oscillation probability. At low energy, we measure the PP. The probability is measured by the PP neutrinos. At intermediate energies, we have the beryllium-7 and the PEP neutrinos. Then we have a gap of energy where, in principle, we can find the CNO neutrinos. And finally, we have the boronate neutrinos measured by SNOW and Super K at higher energies. Here, I'm just considering SNOW for the sake of simplicity. But in principle, adding Super K, it won't modify much the conclusion of this work. Another very important thing to notice is that the current allowed regions for the mixing angle theta 1 2 and the solar mass difference delta m squared 2 1 are for the solar experiment, the one reported in green, and from the reactor experiment Kamlan are these narrow ranges here. It's important to note that we have a best fit for the sine squared of theta 1 2 around 0.3. This is the tangent squared, but so the sine squared is 0.3. And this will be important in the next slide, in the next two slides. So now let's have a look now at our exotic case. A very important parameter I'm going to use in the following slide is this psi, which basically represents the ratio between the strength of the new exotic potential and the Fermi potential. And this is actually a variable of our fit. As a first example, I'm just considering as three parameter the standard mass difference, delta m squared 2-1, theta 1-2, and psi. In particular here, I'm reporting the allowed region in the plane where on the x-axis there is theta 1-2, and on the y-axis the solar mass difference, and I am marginalizing over psi. But here psi is assumed to be negative, so we assume that the new potential is negative. You can see that apart from the standard solution, around 0.3 for the sine squared, we have a degenerate solution in the second octant. For octant, I mean that it's for theta 1-2 greater than 45 degrees. This is exactly the same dark solution we heard in the previous talk. This is something that you can obtain also if you consider the non-standard neutrino interaction. However, there is a very important difference between non-standard neutrino interaction and this model. So non-standard neutrino interactions are some interactions that we don't know about with fermions in ordinary matter. This means that they can affect both the experiment on Earth and in the Sun. Whereas this model is going to be to have an effect only in the Sun, so we are basically free from all the constraints coming from the experiment on Earth. Now let us fix in this case the standard parameter theta 1-2 and the solar mass difference to their standard best fit value, and let's see what happens if we instead let us float the parameter psi and the exotic mixing angle theta 1-4. The left panel represents the case where psi is positive, and the right one represents where psi is negative. So the upper limit that we are actually finding here is basically telling us that theta 1-4 is a normalization constant on the survival probability for electron neutrinos. This can also be shown analytically, but I am skipping that for the sake of time. And whereas the diagonal part of this allowed region is basically telling us that the product between the sine squared of theta 1-4 and psi cannot be greater than order 10. However, these regions are actually obtained by assuming that theta 2-4 is actually zero. If we turn it on, something is changing. There are some allowed regions where psi can actually be very large. In this case, we have a very fast variation of the oscillation probability when we change theta 1-4. This happens because there is some cancellation in the Hamiltonian. Now, another way of seeing the effect of this model is by just observing the survival probability. So this is not actually what I'm showing here, the bare oscillation probability. It's actually convoluted on the distribution of the production point and over all fluxes. So when you see a step, it means that we are passing from, let's say, the PP neutrinos and the CNO neutrinos. Now, the larger is this step, the more the effect of our model, it means that the effect of our model is going to be more significant. So another important thing to notice here is that here, where we actually have the CNO neutrinos, a future measurement of this flux is going to possibly shed light on this model, but not only on this, but also on the non-standard neutrino interactions. So, in conclusions, the Sun is an important probe for the dark matter neutrino interaction. Despite we have a very small density of the dark matter mass, this can be compensated by a very light mass for the gauge mediator between the dark matter and the neutrinos. On the other hand, we don't have the effect for all the neutrino fluxes, but we have the effect for the boronate neutrino, the PEP, the beryllium 7, and in particular for the CNO, which have not been probed yet. And in order, we have a very important similarity with the non-standard neutrino interaction. We both have the dark LMA solution, but there is a very important difference that the Nostalgia-Noether interaction is going to affect the oscillation also in the Earth experiment. And finally, so we need the future measurement for the CNO neutrinos. And thank you for your attention.
Do these neutrinos change the
periodic seismology
of some?
The dark matter?
Yeah, these dark matter.
So I think that the stellar evolution for the number density of particle that we are considering here, that is 10 to the minus 20 with respect to the electron neutrinos, is not really going to affect the stellar evolution. I think you need at least 10 order of magnitude more for the dark matter particles.
How precisely do you need to measure CNO neutrino flux? If you go to the previous slide.
Yeah.
So here, the really sub measurement work seen as a 5% statistical uncertainty, which is very hard to do. Do you need something comparable?
So, we have not estimated that, but I think that a few percent level will be optimal, because I haven't shown here, but in principle it is also allowed something where the probability goes up and then goes down. It is allowed. I've not shown it here. It is still allowed if you consider this model, if you consider non-standard neutrino interaction. But I think that if you consider a few percent level of precision on the CNO, I think that this kind of solution is going to be like.
But you want to measure the CNO in order to do the astrophysics aspects, not to do the probability, survival probability with those energies, or do you?
Both.
Because it's really hard to, because we don't know the fluxes for the CNO, where there's so many, the uncertainty is much larger, right, than for.
Yeah, I mean, this is why I want, a precision measurement for the CNO flux.
You need both the measurements of the charge currents and the mutual current in order to get the survival probability if you don't build the flux.
Yeah, even if you measure only the electron component, you don't measure the muon and tau component. I mean, you can still reconstruct the total flux by considering the measurement for instance coming from the delta m squared from Kamland. Or like the one coming from Juno in the near future, which is completely independent from this. I don't know if.
But then it doesn't provide an independent measurement, right? So it's as Louis was saying, this software, you either infer the flux by assuming that.
No, so it is true that if you take the measurement from Juno, it's not independent, but still it can be a cross check to see if the solar physics for oscillations is consistent with the one observed from
I think without both charge current mutual measure, you're going to have about a 30% error.
I see.
Is it safe to know that there is something that happens with the inside the sample?
So we didn't consider that because we wanted to show that even if the dark matter density is not that high, you can still have an effect on the oscillation by considering a part of the parameter space that is still allowed. Of course, if you consider the self-interaction, let's say that you have more the dark matter clustering, then you don't need to go too low in the mass of the in the dark mediator in order to have a significant effect.
Why
do
you need the dark matter
asymmetric
in this case?
Because we want to avoid as much as possible the annihilation to have as much clustering.
Okay, so if I couple it to, and I don't know how much freedom you have in the choice of mediator here, but the coupling is very small, right? And it would be P with it, right? If it's just a scalar and you're coupling it, or you could at least make a dark matter candidate for which that would be P wave, in which case you produce the annihilation ranges in that.
Also, you are just saying that we don't need to be considered
the asymmetric possibly because you're considering couplings that are in the ballpark where it might be interesting to consider the possibility of dark matter freezing in. where just through the interactions with the mediator, that's sort of where you want to live if the sub-Hubble production gives you the right abundance, and in that case it's just easier to have it asymmetric, so I'm just curious.
Okay. I don't think we have actually considered that.
But then
probably
the coupling is small,
right? Well, I don't know. I mean, this is model dependent to some extent, but usually you're looking for couplings on the order of 10 to the minus 10 to 15 for things, for dark matter, sort of GMD or strength, depending on how exactly it's always the standard.
So that's the question, the small processor.
Yeah, but I mean, they've already covered that, if that's the coupling range between the six. If I understand it correctly, this is literally the coupling between the mediator and the dark matter.
Yeah.
So that would be compatible with Friesen, I think, over a wide range of that.
I think the point is you want to maintain a large population of this stuff inside the sun. So you need to have it hang around for an extremely long time, billions of years, in a very high density environment without an allergy.
Right. And so, but if I have, say, a graph fermion on a couple of scalars, it would be p-wave.
Sure, but like, even then, generally, it will have reached a steady state where it doesn't have a very large abundance.
I see. Okay.
I mean, you need to work it out, but generally the abundance is significantly lower than you retain from waste matter.
And you can't quite, you know, take your position for us going on the hill out.
How large do you say the region is where the dark matter is inside the sun?
So it depends on the dark matter mass. So if you assume...
There was a plot of that,
huh? Yeah, yeah. So if you assume a dark matter mass of 5 GV... So if you have a dark matter mass of 5 GV, you have a peak around the 5% of the solar radius. Yes, if you consider 15 GGV, you have a less significant effect for the oscillation, also for the borrowed neutrinos than the PEP and the beryllium 7.
So this means that if you have like robust interactions, you spread the matter farther out, you get a bigger effect.
But I mean, you cannot go less than 4 GV in mass, because unfortunately then you would have. Yes. Yeah, it's fine tuned a bit, yeah.